This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices, united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
Good times, bad hangovers, and a lot of coffee. And there's going to be some people hurting Sunday morning, especially go to the orangeblood.com tailgate where things get a little bit weird because football season is back. It's here. It's game week. And this is episode 14 of the Dustin McComas Show on theyak.com. I am, of course, Dustin McComas from orangebloods.com, and we've made it. You made it. It's game week. College football is back. There will be games on your television Thursday. Hell, we had games last weekend that weren't very good, although that if you stayed up late for that Arizona-Hawaii game, that turned into be a, like, terribly awesome football game. It was kind of like, I'm trying to, you know, Bloodsport, which is like not a good movie from the like the critical standpoint, but it's a good movie in that whenever it comes on the television, I'm gonna watch it. You know, Roadhouse is another example of that. So that Arizona Hawaii game turned out to be a good one. It ended up being so late on your television because it was played in Hawaii. The Florida-Miami game was close, but it was one of those close but not entertaining kind of games. Both those teams didn't look very good at all. In fact, I think Florida is probably the most overrated team in the country right now. But anyway, the bigger point, college football is back. We had games last week, but this is the true beginning of college football season because pretty much everybody will be playing Thursday, Friday, or Saturday. This week, the Longhorns, of course, get things going Saturday at home at night at DKR Stadium against the Louisiana Tech Bulldogs. Of course, Louisiana Tech, once upon a time, was the home to me my freshman year in college. I went there to play baseball, started going through the fall scrimmages, actually played a little pretty well, and then I was like, I'm not going to be a pro baseball player. It's just not in the cards for me. I'm 5'10", and I don't throw none. I'm 90 miles an hour, so I transferred to the University of Texas, got my degree. And the rest is history. So the La Tech Bulldogs coming to town. And since it's game week, it's prediction time. It's time to go on the record. It's time to put it out there. Preseason camp is done. It's game week. They're going over the scout stuff for Louisiana Tech. They're getting ready for Saturday's game. So that's in the rearview mirror. We don't know everything because we don't get to see all the practices and the scrimmages and things like that. But we know enough by now to have a feel for this football team where there are some concerns, where there are some strengths, what players are saying, what coaches are saying, to help us forecast the upcoming season. So I'm going to give my season prediction, but before I do, I let off my column this way at orangewoods.com today. It's Wednesday, which is column day for me. And, you know, I just wanted to get straight to the point with my record, which, by the way, is 10-2. I'll get to explain that in a second. But I grew up watching wrestling a ton, and my grandparents on my mom's side, I was their only grandchild, so I got spoiled. So wrestling was a big deal. I used to remember going over there, eating a bunch of Doritos, watching the Monday Night Wrestling, or going to Blockbuster and renting the videos, or even occasionally getting the pay-per-view, and they would set up a little area for me to paint my face, because my two favorite wrestlers were the Ultimate Warrior and Sting. And if you remember wrestling, both those guys painted their face. So I would paint my face up, and you know, I'd go drop an elbow drop on a pillow or just go beat the crap out of something and act like a wrestler. So the Ultimate Warrior, if you are unfamiliar, he used to just, like, when his music would hit, he would sprint to the ring, like, full-on sprint and just start losing his freaking mind. He'd start getting on the ring and shaking the ropes. Like, he looked like he just was in the locker room. And you remember that scene in Scarface where Al Pacino's at his desk and he just has mounds of cocaine and he's just, you know, just snorting cocaine and going and going and going. That's to me what the Ultimate Warrior looked like when he came out of the locker room to go down the aisle to the ring. It was like a full-on sprint. Like, he just snorted a bunch of cocaine and then he just started going nuts in the ring, just shaking everything, just, like, throwing his arms up in the air, yelling. I mean, just, it looked like the guy was going to have a heart attack every time he went out there. Which, I mean, unsurprisingly, I think that might have been the reason why he died. Yeah, so I just looked it up. He did die of a heart attack caused by, I think, heart disease. So, unfortunately, in wrestling, especially those guys in the 80s and 90s, if it looks like there was some steroids or drugs or partying going on, chances are there were. and some of these guys ultimately don't live as long as a life as they should. So anyway, I guess I just wanted to talk about the Ultimate Warriors spring into the ring. So that's kind of how I envision myself with this prediction. All right, I've spent weeks thinking about it, calculating it, going over the numbers, listening to the reports, just coming up with my prediction. I've shotgunned my Four Loko sour, and I'm sprinting into the ring like the Ultimate Warrior, and I've got my prediction in hand. So 10-2. So why 10-2? Well, Texas is going to be a better football team this year, I think. They're going to be a better football team than the team that finished 10-4 last season with a Sugar Bowl victory over Georgia. So 10-2 in the regular season would obviously be an improvement from where Texas was last season. I think Texas is going to be a better football team. I know that they lost some key senior players in some areas like Charles Amenihu and Gary Johnson, but this isn't a program that lost a bunch of top-round picks. No offense to those players, in particular Amenihu, who was drafted, and Gary Johnson, those guys were really good college football players, but they weren't unquestioned All-American type stars and the types of players that are drafted early on in an NFL draft. So while Texas is going to have to replace some guys, it's not replacing, you know, a bunch of top round picks. So I think in some ways Texas is going to be more talented this season, although a lot of that talent is going to be concentrated in its younger classes, mainly its freshman, redshirt freshman, and sophomore classes, because Texas has recruited so very well in the 2018 and 2019 classes. So yeah, there are going to be some growing pains. You know, that's one thing that while Texas is going to be more talented in some areas, experience shows, you know, just in the little things like lining up, not blowing assignments, getting other players to line up the right way, just not being maybe caught off guard or overwhelmed by different aspects of the game, you know, seeing certain formations and things like that before, knowing how to study tape and those sorts of things. I mean, experience does matter, but I think Texas is going to be a better football team. So I think it's going to be a more talented football team. That's one of the main reasons why I've got them going 10-2 next season. And I think – not next season, this season. I think Sam Ehlinger made a really, really good point yesterday when he met with the media. And Anwar Richardson wrote about this at orangebloods.com. This is a program now and a team that doesn't just think it can win games or doesn't just think it can have a 10-win season or compete against the big boys of college football. It's now done it. And it's been a long, long time since there's been that kind of belief in a locker room to where you can talk about it all you want and trying to work your way back and winning these games and winning a Big 12 conference championship and all these things. But a lot of those guys in the locker room have now done those things. They've won a Sugar Bowl. They've played for a conference championship. They've gone into the Cotton Bowl and beat a top Oklahoma team. They have a 10-win season. There's more of an understanding and a confidence. And I think confidence is so huge in college athletics because we are dealing with a bunch of 18 to 22-year-old young men. And the confidence can sometimes be a roller coaster. But if you've got a group that believes but also believes with that experience, say, hey, we've done this before. We can play with anybody in the country. We can beat anybody in the country. I think that sort of thing matters. And we haven't seen a Texas team that truly has that sort of belief in a long, long time. I think you'd have to go back to the 2010 season, which we know ended up being a horrific season. But that was still coming off of a national title game appearance. I mean, there are a lot of players on that roster that have won a lot of football games at Texas, a lot of really, really good players. Including some guys that went on to have nice careers after the University of Texas. So that's probably the last time we're heading into a season where you had a group of guys that had that sort of experience. And we haven't really seen what that looks like in a long time. We haven't seen what that looks like completely under Tom Herman at Texas. I think that we've seen the process of building their culture. And I'll get to that in a little bit because I thought Oscar Giles made a really interesting comment when I was talking to him at the media availability last week. But we haven't seen a Texas team in a long time that had that sort of belief because there is some real experience to point towards. They had big games to point back to. They had big-time performances. They got a taste of playing in the Big 12 championship game and right in that game against a team that they had beaten a month prior in the Cotton Bowl in Oklahoma, a team that's gone to the college football playoff a lot recently. So that sort of thing matters a lot. And speaking of Ehlinger and that belief, college football, especially in the Big 12, you win games with quarterback play. You win games more so with quarterback play and the ability to score points than I think anything else. Again, I said it in last week's podcast. If the Big 12 was about defense, Oklahoma wouldn't win the league all the time. Oklahoma wins the league all the time because they score a bunch of points, they have really good quarterback play, and they don't lose games that they shouldn't. They handled their business. Yeah, they might slip up once, but they often always have such good quarterback play and offensive play that they're going to outscore people and make up for poor defense at times. So the Big 12 and college football are about quarterback play. And Ehlinger is as good as it gets in the non-Trevor Lawrence realm of college football. Maybe Tua is up there as well, although I think that he's kind of got, you know, sneakily has some questions to answer about himself, because when those windows started getting a little bit tighter, when Alabama actually started playing people late last season, he wasn't quite as good as he was earlier in that season. But anyway, college football is about quarterback play and about having a leader at that position that can go win football games. And make no mistake, Sam Ehlinger is the unquestioned leader of the Texas football program. He's a guy that the rest of his teammates feed off of, and he's the kind of guy that you saw it even in losses at times last year. That game at Oklahoma State where he was basically on the sideline saying, hey, we're going to win this game. Texas didn't win that game, but it came pretty damn close thanks to Ehlinger bringing that program back. So that sort, having that position in such a good place right now matters a lot. Matters a lot because quality quarterback play and offensive play in college football can really mask a lot of other things. And speaking of that Giles quote, it's, you know, he used the word overachieve, which is what Tom Herman has used in times as well, talking about the 2018 season. I don't know if that's mostly coach speak, a little coach speak, but I do think that they absolutely believe that to an extent, that last year's team did overachieve some when you just simply look at it on the surface of finishing the season with 10 wins and winning a Sugar Bowl over Georgia. I think that they truly believe there was some sort of overachieving to that because they really do view this as a process. As a process of building a culture, building a roster that's talented, building and improving positions and all these things. Just building. Building a program that can sustain success over a long period of time. And I really do think that they are really, really excited about this upcoming season. I think they feel like that they are realistically ready to compete for a conference championship. But I also do think that internally they view year four, the 2020 season, as the one where it's like, okay, we can run the table. And I don't think they completely view this season as that. It's one of the reasons why I have them losing two games in the regular season, because they're not quite a finished product yet, but I'm also a big believer in past results. And if you look at the data of head coaches coaching at a place like Texas, you know, making the move like Tom Herman made, if that coach is going to be successful, and I think Tom Herman is going to be, you usually see it in that third year. That third year is normally when you see a really big jump in the type of performance of that football team if that head coach is going to win big at that program. And I think Tom Herman has shown, because of the way last season ended, that this is that's a trajectory of the Texas program right now. That's where it's heading. But it is a process, and this is still the third season of that process. The roster still, I think, still isn't quite where they'd like it to be, but it's definitely a lot closer. The culture is really ingrained, but even they say that it's still, you know, it's still a work in progress until you get 1 through 85 of the scholarship roster to truly, fully commit to that culture. But there's been real progress made, and that's, you know, that's one of the reasons why that I think that the most likely outcomes for me this season are 10-2, 9-3, and 11-1. Because I just think that Texas, until proven otherwise, is going to slip somewhere. And this has been the one weakness of Tom Herman so far in his short, relatively short head coaching career, is that he usually has a game somewhere where he slips up, where they lose to somebody that they shouldn't lose to. You know, you know, maybe we should just say, like, hey, let's make sure Texas can win a season opener for a change, because the Maryland game the last two seasons has happened. There's been, you know, issues where Texas just hasn't had the performance it should against an inferior opponent. Or if you look back at their average score last season, they basically played a touchdown game against everybody. Their average score was 31-26 just go tally up all the points they scored and all the points they gave up. And if you look at the results, it's kind of how it was all the time. You know, they get up big at Kansas State and they let Kansas State hang around. They've got to sweat that game to the final moment. You know, they had the Ellinger injury issue against Baylor, and Baylor's thrown into the end zone on the final series of the game as the clock expired. They almost lose that game. Didn't blow Kansas out. I mean, ended up controlling that game, but didn't blow Kansas out like they should have to end the regular season last year. So we've seen Tom Herman teams get up for the big games, have some really, really impressive big game performances. But it's those inferior opponents, those ones when you're, you know, a 10-point favorite or a 14-point favorite. Or against Louisiana Tech, they're probably going to be a 21-point favorite or more. I think last I looked, they were a 20.5-point favorite or the Louisiana Tech. That's to me, is where we'll see the next step of progression come from Texas. It's not getting up for the big games and playing with anybody in the country. I have zero doubt in my mind that Texas is going to be fully capable of going to the Cotton Bowl and beating Oklahoma again and beating LSU when they come to Austin for week two. In fact, I'd predict that Texas is going to win that week two game against LSU. We've seen Texas get up for those games, and we've seen Herman coach teams get up for those types of games. It's the next step is those other games. Kansas State at home, Texas Tech at home. When you go on the road to West Virginia against a new head coach and a new quarterback, can you flex some muscle there? When Oklahoma State comes to town, can you make that a game that's not in contention in the final seconds of the game? Flexing that muscle, you know, because a college football team is not going to play perfect all the time. It's not. You know, you go back and watch that LHN documentary on the 2008 Texas team. I think Mack Brown in there mentions that you're only going to play something like 4 or 5 perfect games a year. Everything else is just not going to be perfect, or, you know, let's just call it like A-level kinds of games. And it's true. It's true. You're not going to get a consistently great performance from your team against everybody on the schedule. It's just so rare to see that. We just haven't seen it that often. The last time I think we saw something close to that was probably 2013 Florida State, when they set the record for the margin of victory for a national title team, and I think in the BCS era or something like that. You know, even the Texas, the 2005 team had its moments, you know, the letdown at Oklahoma State where Vince had to bring him back. So there's usually points on the schedule where you're just not going to play a perfect football game. But if you look at the Clemsons and the Alabamas of the recent years, more often than not, they beat the shit out of bad football teams. They've got their backups in the third quarter, and they're not running up the score, but they're not stopping scoring points either, because their backups are beating the crap out of that inferior opponent as well. We haven't seen Texas really do that under Tom Herman. That, to me, is the big next step, because, you know, think back to some of Mac's greatest teams when they played a pushover in week one. Usually when they blew out somebody in week one, they ended up being a really good football team. And I think that's the case nationally as well. If you come out early on in the season and you're beating the crap out of bad football teams, you're probably going to be a really good football team. If you come out very early in the season and you're struggling against teams that you should be beaten by 3-4 touchdowns, maybe even 5 touchdowns, that's not a good sign moving forward. And Texas has two opportunities like that early in the season: Louisiana Tech at home, and then when they go to Houston and NRG Stadium and play Rice, who some metrics think is going to be the worst football team in college football this year. Those need to be comfortable wins. Texas should beat Rice by 40-plus points. Texas should beat Louisiana Tech by 4 touchdowns. If Texas doesn't, even if it beats LSU, you got to still wonder, when is this program going to take that step to really flexing some muscle, going for the knockout shot against some of those inferior opponents? So all of that, all of those reasons are why I've got Texas going 10-2 in the regular season this year. They're going to be better. I'm confident they're going to be able to win any big game they play in. But can they consistently beat those inferior opponents handily, and can they win those handle your business types of games when you go on the road to Baylor, when you go on to the road to West Virginia? Everybody's going to have that Iowa State game pegged as a big game, you know, but what about at Baylor the next week? What about at West Virginia coming off a bye early in the season? What about when Texas Tech and Kansas State and Oklahoma State come to Austin, you know, teams that aren't ranked in the preseason top 25 right now? until Texas flexes their muscle consistently against those types of teams, I think that that's got to be a little bit of an unknown and a slight concern as Tom Herman and staff build this program up to one that can really get the ball rolling and sustain big-time success in college football. I talked some in last week's podcast about the Big 12 and the you know, so much turnover in the league, the unpredictable nature of the league this year. And my Big 12 predictions for the regular season finish, keywords regular season. I've got Oklahoma, Texas, Baylor, Iowa State, Oklahoma State, TCU, West Virginia, Texas Tech, Kansas State, and Kansas. But I think when you get beyond Oklahoma and Texas, that Baylor, Iowa State, Oklahoma State, TCU, West Virginia range, I think all those teams could finish with 6 wins. All those teams could finish with 4 wins, and it really wouldn't surprise me. I think you're going to see a lot of teams in that 6-3, 5-4, 4-5 kind of range in the Big 12. The only big surprise to me would be if somebody leapfrogs Texas or Oklahoma and gets into the Big 12 championship game. That would be the big surprise to me. Other than that, I don't think anything's really going to surprise me because I think all those teams are going to be around 500, maybe a game above, a game or two above, maybe a game or two below, besides Kansas, who I think is in for another long season. And maybe Kansas State might be in that realm as well, although I think that, you know, Texas Tech and Kansas State are kind of behind that West Virginia, TCU, Oklahoma State, Iowa State, Baylor group. So that's how I have it shaking out in the regular season. I don't foresee a team becoming a real juggernaut in that league besides Oklahoma and Texas, because let's be honest, this league, in terms of just pure talent, top to bottom, I think it's a very underrated coaching league, but just pure talent on the rosters, top to bottom, it's not as good as other leagues. It's certainly not as good as the SEC. It's probably not as good as the Big Ten. The ACC is really, really down right now, so I think you can put those two leagues, you know, at least on equal footing as it relates to that. I think you can, but it's not as good as the Pac-12, who's got a few teams, I think, that in that league that could legitimately make the playoffs and legitimately win, you know, I mean, legitimately win 11 games or so in the regular season. So you gotta have big-time talent to be one of those true top 10 juggernaut types of teams, and I don't think anybody else in the Big 12 has that talent besides Oklahoma and Texas. Yeah, Baylor brings some guys back, and they've got their quarterback back, and you know, Iowa State's got their quarterback back, and everybody likes Matt Campbell, but Oklahoma State, TCU, West Virginia, Texas Tech, Kansas State, Kansas, Baylor, and Iowa State do not recruit like the big boys. They just don't. It's one of the reasons why I think Iowa State might be a tad overcooked, because they don't have guys like Hakeem Butler and David Montgomery show up all the time. So that's how I have it shaking out in the Big 12 for the regular season. In the Big 12 championship game, I've got Texas over Oklahoma. Yes, I do have the Longhorns winning the Big 12 championship after finishing 10-2 in the regular season. The tiebreaker in that is I really, really like Jalen Hurts a lot. I actually thought he should have been a 5-star prospect coming out of high school after I got a up-close look at him a couple times. I think he has tremendous leadership intangibles. I think he's an underrated athlete. I think that Oklahoma is going to build that offense around him. But I don't think Oklahoma is going to be as explosive on offense as they were under Baker Mayfield and Kyler Murray. And for that, I think Texas is going to edge them in the Big 12 championship game, because there's just not going to be that, oh my God, element with Jalen Hurts like there was with Kyler Murray, where you're kind of, you know, it's getting to the fourth quarter, your defense is wearing down, and you're kind of nervous because that guy's capable of breaking off an 80-yard run or screaming around the pocket and hitting one of those receivers deep down the field for a big quick strike touchdown. And Oklahoma's going to have that element, but I don't think they're going to have it as much as they did last season. That, to me, was kind of the tiebreaker in that. I think Texas is going to have more of that quick strike element this year. They're going to have more talent in their secondary. And for that, I you know, almost like a coin flip type of thing. It really wouldn't surprise me if you know, like I said, the big surprise would be if Texas and Oklahoma aren't in the Big 12 championship game, because that would mean that something went way wrong with those football teams. Let's go rapid fire with some other conference predictions for the upcoming season, because let's be honest, everybody watches more than just Texas when it comes to college football. It's a religion. It is a you know, 11 a.m. to midnight type of thing on Saturday in terms of watching football. Like I said earlier, the ACC sucks. As much as it pains me to say it, because I am a Florida State fan, the ACC is horrible. I've got Clemson over Miami in the ACC title game. Miami starting two true freshman offensive tackles who got abused by Florida. I think Florida had 10 sacks in that game. So it's totally possible that Miami doesn't make it to the ACC title game, even though they have a favorable schedule and a favorable division. But that's who I'm picking right now, as much as that pains me. But nobody in that league is close to Clemson. Nobody. Clemson's in its own galaxy in the ACC. In the Big Ten, I've got Ohio State over Nebraska. Michigan until proven otherwise. Ohio State's going to have Michigan's number. And Ohio State's really, really talented. They've got Justin Fields, a quarterback who's unproven, but is as talented as anybody in the country. I've got them playing Nebraska in the Big Ten championship game, mostly because Nebraska has the most favorable schedule in its division, a division that's very balanced but lacks really good football teams. In the Pac-12, I've got Washington over Utah. It says a lot about USC that I didn't hesitate at all to put Utah in that game with Washington. I really like Stanford, Oregon, and Washington, but look at Washington's road games in that league. Colorado, Arizona, Oregon State, and Stanford. Now, Stanford gets both. I believe they get both Oregon and Washington at home. So there's a real chance that they could play their way into the Pac-12 championship game. I actually think they're the most underrated team in the country heading into the season because they've got a really good offensive line and a senior quarterback that's a good player. Usually if you have those two things, you're going to win a lot of football games. But I'm sticking with Washington over Utah. Washington, you know, is going to replace Jake Browning with Jacob Eason, who used to be a five-star. I don't think he was number one overall, but I think he was definitely top 10 overall prospect when he was a quarterback before he went to Georgia and then left when Jake Fromm won that job at Georgia. Speaking of Georgia, I've got them in the SEC title game against Alabama, and I've got them losing to Alabama again. But as you'll see later on, I do have Georgia getting into the college football playoff because their schedule is very manageable. Their only difficult road game is at Auburn. They get all of the other tough games at home, and they're going to have an opportunity for a couple of statement games. Notre Dame, a top 10 team, will go to Georgia, so that's an opportunity to give a signature out-of-conference win, and I really think Georgia's got a real chance to get to the SEC title game undefeated. And if they lose that game to Alabama, I think they're still probably going to get into the college football playoff. The other teams I have projected to be in the college football playoff, a lot of usual suspects: Clemson, Alabama, Georgia, and Ohio State. I have in the just missed category Notre Dame, Texas, and Washington. I've got Clemson winning the national championship and Trevor Lawrence winning the Heisman. I think it's a little bit easier, you know, sometimes in professional sports, we see these teams that win championships and it's hard to repeat. Well, I say that, but the Warriors and, you know, the Patriots get back a lot of time, but in baseball it hardly ever happens. The one difference with college is that you get so much roster turnover oftentimes. I mean, a lot of guys are moving on. You've got a lot of guys moving up the depth chart ready to prove themselves. So there is a little bit more of an opportunity to kind of string together really, really good seasons, which Clemson and Alabama and Georgia and Ohio State have been doing, especially Clemson and Alabama. And if you look at those schedules, mainly Clemson and Georgia, they're going to be favored in every game they play, besides Georgia if they play Alabama in the SEC title game. There's not many teams on those schedules that can match talent or come close to matching talent with those two teams in quarterback play. And then you factor in the talent around the roster and things like that. It's almost like, maybe this is a topic for another day, but the concentration of talent in college football is getting so skewed towards the top tier of teams that I wonder, you know, with this four-team playoff system, I wonder how many times you're going to see the same teams over and over and over again, because what we're seeing in recruiting right now is a lot of these top-tier teams are getting all of the talent. All of the talent. Say what you will about star rankings and all those things, but there's a clear correlation. You can go look at the recruiting classes and the star rankings and all those things. There's a clear correlation between signing really good recruiting classes with top players and winning a lot of football games. And right now, programs like Georgia and Clemson and Alabama and Ohio State are recruiting better than anyone. So, you know, I think back to last year in college football, and last year was almost, it wasn't boring, but I almost lost interest at times. Just because it was just so predictable. It was so predictable. You knew Clemson was really, really good. You knew Alabama was really, really good. You knew Georgia was really, really good. You knew Oklahoma was good. You knew Ohio State was good. like, there wasn't really much of an unpredictable nature, because I think there's a clear gap between these top, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 teams and the rest of college football that just simply can't match the talent that they have. And now that you're getting these mega staffs and you know, these quality coaches, and they're getting really good quarterbacks and all those things, it's just hard to find those upset type seasons now when you've got these teams coming out of nowhere and having a great season. So that, I think that's just something to follow as we jump into the college football season, is that there seems to be a developing trend of these top tier teams that are just grabbing all of the talent. But we'll see this year. We'll see. You know, if both Clemson and Alabama don't make the college football playoff, I will be shocked. Really, really shocked. Because especially with Clemson, I mean, it'll be curious to see if they have that 2009 Texas vibe, to where the season was almost unenjoyable for Texas because they're coming out the 2008 amazing season, and everybody thought they should go undefeated, and it kind of sucked the fun out of it because it was like everything was a must win and a must blowout and those sorts of things. But I really don't get that vibe with Clemson. I think that, you know, Dabo Sweeney obviously has that program in a really, really good place. And as always, it wouldn't be a Dustin Show podcast without some food discussion. I had the great fortune of earlier this week going and having dinner at Laundrette. I've heard amazing things about it, and I just never had an opportunity to get over there and have a meal there. And expectations were met. It was really, really, really good. Had the fried shrimp appetizer, which was excellent. Got the Brussels sprouts as a side, and I had their version of their barbecue ribs as well, which had like a kind of like a sweet garlic type of glaze and sauce with them, which is not your typical barbecue or ribs style glaze and sauce, and they were really, really good. Like, total fall off the bone thing, the Brussels sprouts. I really like Brussels sprouts, especially when you go to restaurants like that kind of get that sauce and that glaze and that caramelization with them as well, which I can't at all master at home. Brussels sprouts were great. It was half price bottle of wine night. They have a great wine selection there. Really cool vibe too. Kind of just nestled off near Cesar Chavez. I want to say it kind of had like a French bistro type of vibe, I think, if I'm remembering correctly. I really, really enjoyed it. I would highly recommend it. And with the off season, or as we get closer to the end of the off season, people become starved for content at orangewoods.com, because it's like we're almost there, but we're not quite there. And it never fails. Usually like once a month or once every 2 months, there's like a 5 or 6 page thread about Tex-Mex in Austin. And somehow it got started at the things a good Tex-Mex restaurant needs to have, or like what you grade Tex-Mex on. And I think that's a pretty, probably more complex discussion than like most people think. Like, oh, you know, if they have good enchiladas, or if they have good quesadillas, or this or that or whatever, I think that's kind of whatever your personal taste is. Like, I'm one of the types of people that I have my favorite Tex-Mex places in Austin. I usually, when I go there, I order the same thing at those respective places. Not the same thing universally. Like, I don't get quesadillas at every Tex-Mex place. But I have one place where I really like the quesadillas, one place where I really like the fajitas, one place where I really like the enchiladas, so on and so forth. So it's kind of up to your own personal taste. But I do think that any list, or any, if you're grading these Tex-Mex places and you're determining what is good and what is not, they must have good chips and salsa. Chips and salsa is the first impression. It is, you're on a blind date, or you get a Tinder date or whatever, and you're sitting there and she shows up, you know, and, you know, says hello and the smile or whatever. That is the chips and salsa of the Tex-Mex restaurant. That is the greeting. That is the hello. Here's your menu. Here's some fresh chips and salsa. They've got to be fresh. They can't be stale, and the salsa has to be fresh. It has to have good flavor. It has to have a little bit of spice to it, because that's the first impression. Because if the chips and salsa suck, or I think that you're lazy with your chips and salsa and they're stale or they're cold and the salsa's not fresh and it lacks flavor, that's gonna affect my perception of everything else that I have at your restaurant. It's going to affect what I think. Oh, I'm going to expect whatever I order to the menu to be not as good as I thought it was going to be heading into it. You know, that, because it just changes everything. Because what are you going to think of when you're looking at the menu or you're ordering your food, or when you're waiting for your food after you order? Man, these chips and salsa are just okay. They're not that good. So to me, that is where the list must start. That is like the clearance. You know, if you get through that, you've got my attention. You've got me, like you've got me in a situation where you can win me over with the rest of whatever is going to happen after that. So it's, you know, some people say, I don't know, good margaritas. Some people say fajitas. Some people say enchiladas. Whatever. I think that any list has got to start with the chips and salsa. And some of my favorite chips and salsa in Austin, I think Matt's El Rancho is really, really good. Mahdi's, although Mahdi's, like, it kind of, I talk to people that have lived in Austin for a long time, and everybody has like their ranked list of Mahdi's because they don't all taste the same. I don't know why that is, but I mean, I guess it is kind of hard to replicate it consistently everywhere. But the South Lamar Mahdi's location is my favorite. I think they have some of the best chips and salsa that I've had in Austin. Enchiladas y Mas. Their salsa has a real kick to it. It's one of my favorite chips and salsa in Austin as well. So those are three of my favorites. I guess I could throw in Taco Flats, although that's more of like a pay type situation where you pay to get like a fancy, you know, guacamole and queso dip and salsa and things like that. But their chips have this little, like, almost like a brown sugary type thing on them that are really, really good. But Enchiladas y Mas, Mahdi's, and Matt's El Rancho. I'm probably forgetting another one, but those are definitely three staples for me, to where I know every single time I go there, when I sit down and I've got my margarita, or, you know, I've got my menu, and I've got a water, and I'm waiting for my drink, and I'm getting the chips and salsa, I know that they are going to be good. And it's one of the reasons I keep going back over and over and over again, because that first impression gets me every time. So with that, we will wrap up episode 14 of the Dustin McComas Show on theyak.com with some Tex-Mex discussion about how you grade Tex-Mex. It's got to start with the chips and salsa. It's got to. Again, my prediction for the Longhorns this season in the regular season, 10-2, getting to the Big 12 championship game, winning that game over Oklahoma. So a season that's better than last season for the Longhorns. Another step in the right direction as this program's being built under Tom Herman. Still some concerns. Backup offensive line, running back depth, linebacker position. But I think, ultimately, it's as simple as this. I think that Texas is going to be a better football team. I feel like they have more of a confidence level. They have actual experience of winning big games. They have one of the best quarterbacks in the country. I think all of that is going to show this season as they reach the 10-win mark in the regular season for the first time since 2009. Yes, it's been that long since Texas won 10 games in a regular season. Of course, last year they won 10 games total, 10 or more games total for the first time in a long, long time as well. So thank you for listening. We've made it. It is game week. We are just a few days away from the opening of the Texas football season. Get to orangewatch.com. Check out all of our content there. Follow me on Twitter at DMcComasOB on Twitter. Follow me on Instagram, Dustin McComas. Follow the Yak Network on Twitter and Instagram as well. And get to theyak.com and check out all of our great podcast content. We've got poker podcasts. We've got football podcasts, and more football podcasts as we get ready for the Texas Longhorns this season. Again, thank you for listening. And until I talk to you next time, take care.